First of all, before we dive into some questions here on this topic, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a first-term legislator representing District 16, which covers parts of Lincoln, Turner, and Union counties down in the southeast corner of the state. Tell us a little bit about Carla Lems and how you got involved in the state legislature.
Well, you know, I got involved, I've been involved in the party for quite a few years. So, you know, there was just as things go along and you see openings come open in different elected positions, you're like, you know, maybe I should run for this or maybe I should run for that. I really hadn't been thinking about it too much. But we were during that time, kind of during COVID and during after the 2020 election, and I was like, you know, I just think that maybe it's time for me to start getting involved, and had an opening in our district for a House seat as one of our representatives was retiring and wasn't going to run again. And after visiting with some of those elected officials that were in my district, I decided to throw my hat in the ring. And then, of course, we had redistricting, so it kind of changed things for us, and I ended up having a primary race, but ended up getting my first seat and went through my first session this last term, and that was quite an experience. I always tell people it's fast and furious, especially your first time in. You know, they say it's like drinking from a fire hose, and that's really a good analogy. So, but I grew up on a family farm and presently properties involved in some different real estate things and kind of wear a lot of hats in our office here, my husband and I. But we do have a unique thing in our lives. We have a daughter with special needs, and that has opened up the way for us to have a coffee shop in Canton called Laura's Lattes, where our daughter is employed. So if you're ever down in the Canton area, please stop in and see Laura, and we might be in there, we may not, but we have some great people that work there and a great thing for our community. So anyway, of course, the main area that I was involved in this last session was property rights. And so it's my desire to serve the people with integrity and tell the truth and let God do the rest.
Carla Lems, you own land down in southeast South Dakota. When we were visiting on the phone yesterday, I said, why or how did you get so involved in this carbon sequestration topic? And I got an interesting response. You said that you own land that both pipelines are proposed to cross. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Hmm.
Yes. So our first letter from Summit came about 2 years ago, I would say. Excuse me. And, you know, as we deal with pipelines in the business that we're in. We deal with ag land and even commercial and residential property. So we've just finished the project replacing the northern natural gas line that runs from Sioux City to Sioux Falls. Just got done with widening, you know, they're going to widen Highway 18 down here by Canton. So a lot of properties were affected by that, and we had a property there affected. So we are not immune to dealing with pipelines or, you know, public projects, if you will, that are going to be beneficial for the public. They're not always fun to deal with those projects. You know, there's usually headaches involved, and, you know, some snafu comes up and you have to deal with it. And we do that. And because we know that these projects, they're something that the public's going to be using. My family actually even was involved with Dakota Access. We worked with them. We felt like this was a needed project, and so we went ahead and did that as well. When this hit my desk, I just thought, you know, this is unlike the others in that I felt like right away I felt like it was tied into, you know, the Green New Deal, and that's what's pushing a lot of these projects because of the carbon credits and the 45Q tax credits that are available. And I really just kind of set it aside on my desk because I thought, you know, we're just not interested in doing another project right now. We've had enough on our plate, and they take up a lot of time and energy, and not interested. So I set it aside, but the more that I heard, the more I went to meetings, I could see the writing on the wall that this was not going to be an opt-in or opt-out kind of thing. This was going to be, if you choose to not participate and we choose to not move this off of your property, you will participate whether you want to or not. And that is where I really felt that we were getting into an area that was crossing the line into being unconstitutional.
That voice you hear is from Representative Carla Lems of Canton, District 16 State Representative. She's a Republican, and she's been deeply involved in this whole process of arguing against eminent domain and in support of private property rights. Carla, you said something that caught my ear when you said that the Dakota Access Project was one that you supported because you saw a need for it. I'm guessing that you don't see a need for these two carbon sequestration projects. Is that correct? The need for them?
Well, you know, I guess that's up to the company. If they want to go ahead and do a project that they think is going to be beneficial for some investors and whatever, that's their right to go ahead and do that. But I also think that the person that is being affected on the ground, the landowner, should have a right to say, I do not want to participate in your project, and so no thank you. And, you know, that's where we are today. We're seeing over 100 condemnations in the state of South Dakota right now to affected landowners that do not want this project. We have had public meetings that are held and county commission meetings, planning and zoning. The people that I see showing up to these meetings, I would say most, I mean, 98%, if I had to put a number on it, 98% of these people showing up, and we have full meetings. We've had to add chairs in Lincoln County for some of these meetings. They do not want this project. They do not want this affecting and coming through their property and being forced to do so. And, you know, I listened to your show on Monday, actually, I listened to it after the fact because I wasn't able to listen live. But the one thing that was glaringly absent to me is the issue of public use. And I know the Fifth Amendment came up, Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, that if the government takes private property for public use, then the government must provide just compensation. Well, I would argue that this is not for public use. I am not going to be using the carbon that's coming out of that pipeline for myself. My neighbor is not going to be using it. No one in Sioux Falls or Watertown or Brown County is going to be using the CO2. This is going to go, at the end of the day, it's going to end up in the ground in North Dakota, Summit is, and, of course, Navigator's going to Illinois, or if they find a sequestration spot there, eventually it may end up there. But, again, they're using our own tax dollars on the front end of this to basically take our property. And then they're going to be the ones to make the money on the other end, and we are never going to be using this product.
Carla, you said that at these meetings that you've had, the figure you gave was about 98% of the people at those meetings don't want the project. Is there opposition to this based on private property rights, eminent domain? Is it safety issues? If the pipeline is built, why are so many people against this at the meetings that you've been to?
I would say the top two issues are private property being taken for private gain. And that's the no eminent domain for private gain has been kind of the mantra of those people. And they do not see this as a public use. They don't see it as a public utility, something that's going to benefit them or their neighbors. And they don't want to be forced to be involved in the project. I would say the second thing is safety. Obviously we have talked, I know you've discussed this on your show before. This is a hazardous material, a hazardous substance. So, you know, they're going to take it from liquid form. They're going to turn it into supercritical CO2. It's going to be piped at 2200 or thereabouts PSI, and then sequestered underground. And, you know, I mean, there has been issues with these kinds of pipelines in the past, specifically the one in Setartia, Mississippi, that ruptured back in 2020, I believe. And over 40 people went to the emergency room. And this is an odorless, colorless substance. Is in supercritical form. It displaces oxygen. It's heavier than air. It displaces oxygen. And so, you know, it is a very real concern for many people that this is coming very close to their homes.
How
recent? And then I will just add, you know, the 45Q tax credits, too. If I had to have a number three and four, we have the 45Q tax credits, which are, you know, this is subsidized by the federal government. And with our tax dollars, which we can't afford anyway. And finally, we have a lot of foreign ownership involved, which if you listen to the Navigator hearings yesterday, that came out with their group there that their owned majority of ownership for them is BlackRock.
A question that I'm going to ask Jim Sire when he's in tomorrow from Glacial Lakes Energy. And this is the question in this whole conversation that I am keenly interested in getting the answer to. I'm gonna ask you too this question just to get your reaction or your response to it, Carla. If these pipelines are not constructed, what is the long-term impact going to be on our ethanol industry in South Dakota? Because it's important. It's a revenue producer. It employs mm-hmm. people. It's important to our state economy. What are your thoughts on that? Have you talked to farmers that might sell their corn to plants? Have you talked to shareholders of ethanol plants? What are their thoughts on the future of the industry as it relates to these pipelines?
Well, I would say if you talk to the industry, they're going to tell you that they're not going to be able to exist if they don't get this project. When you talk to people on the ground, farmers that even have investments in these ethanol plants, that have been very faithful to sell their corn to, you know, not only our local elevators, but supporting the ethanol industry. You know, we have Representative John Sharda, who's a farmer. He loves ethanol. He'll talk to you about ethanol all day and how great it is. But he is not for this project. And myself, our family has an investment in an ethanol plant. My dad was one of the original investors in Verisun. If you remember that was the kind of the kickoff of the ethanol industry here. And so we're not against ethanol, and that is a false narrative that's been painted for the people here. But I think what's at stake for the people on the ground is they see if we do it for this industry, then what other industry is lining up behind it that we are also going to have to use the same precedent to save the industry. And, you know, you and I both know that in 2035, California is not going to be, there's going to be no new gas-powered cars being sold in the state of California. So, again, where is all the viability of this pipeline long-term going to come from? I don't know. But, again, I think it's a dangerous precedent. Any time when we go out to save a specific industry, which other industry then is next, and I am all for industry. Don't get me wrong. I am all for, you know, economic development in the state of South Dakota, but it can never come at the expense of our citizens' constitutional rights. May we not be stepping over the back of citizens to promote our own industry, no matter how important that industry might be. Now, I think there are different ways to go about this. There are other things that they can do with these plants. They can sequester on site. There are viable options there. There's a program called, or an industry, it's Cap CO2, where they capture that. They can use it for methanol. That's a real up-and-coming thing. Our whole shipping industry in our, you know, in the world, basically, is going to be changing from diesel to methanol. So that's going to be a very valued product. So I don't think that this carbon dioxide pipeline is the only answer for the ethanol industry.
I talked yesterday, Carla, we had Representative John Hansen from Del Rapids on the air, and I asked him, even if you are not on one of these proposed pipeline routes, do you essentially still have skin in the game? Because you maybe own property that's not on the pipeline route. Does that mean you should still be paying attention to this issue? What would you say to that? Should we all be interested in what's happening here?
Absolutely, because this will come to you in one way, shape, or form. I look at this as the domino effect. So if they can do it with this, you better believe they're going to be looking for the next project to come through. And we know that they are proposing 65,000 miles of these pipelines throughout the United States. Now, that's a lot of pipelines. I think that there are about 5,000 pipelines like this right now in the United States. Of course, Summit is proposing about 2,000-plus miles. Navigator is a little over 1,000. So you add those up. Well, we have a long ways to go before we get to 65,000. So where do you think they're going to be coming? Well, they're going to look to where they've already been able to get through. And so, you know, this isn't going to be the end of these pipelines. We also have solar and wind that, you know, very similar types of things that can get credits and, you know, for saving the planet, if you will, or whatever. But again, at whose expense is it going to be? Is it going to be at the expense of the citizens? And are they going to be looking? We know that they're already looking at eminent domain for these kinds of projects. You have banks like J.P. Morgan that has said so. So, you know, how long is it going to be that South Dakota is going to hold out on those projects and not force people to do this? I had a woman come up to me in Parker the other night. I believe it was Monday night we had that meeting. And she showed me a map of her place just right over the line from Turner County into McCook. She's there on a 10-acre parcel of land surrounded by, and this it's a proposed solar panel field. And she didn't even know. I mean, she has really no say. So it will affect your property in what it's worth. We have personal examples of that happening with our property. We had proposed a few years back to put a lake property right off, we call it the Klondike Road 276, which is south of Harrisburg. And we were going to put 86 homes on there. I have all of the drawings. I'll probably be testifying to that next week at the Navigator hearing. But we ended up at the time we didn't go forward with the project, but we've always kept in the back of our mind to do so. Well, the Navigator line is going to be coming through that property. And it's, you know, sometimes when you're doing a development, too, you need a certain type of property. You need, you know, certain soils and whatever, and this would have just worked really great for that particular thing. But now, if this would go through, obviously we wouldn't be able to do that. And I also want to put it out to some of these counties and things that are looking at the economic development part of it. I want to say, how much economic development are you going to lose on the other side when you allow these through, and then people who have hopes and dreams and visions for their own property, whether that be expanding a cattle feedlot or planting trees or doing a development or anything like that, you are impacting the people that have put their blood, sweat, and tears into their property and owning that property and doing something with it.
Carla, are these carbon sequestration companies, and I've heard this, I don't know it for fact, but I'll ask you, have they been using some heavy-handed tactics in order to get landowners to sign easements?
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. And I've heard it again and again and again from people. Obviously, the one that we all know about is Jared Bosley, you know, up in Brown County. And I actually even went up to his hearing, and I was really disappointed that in the hearing the judge would not let him tell his side of the story of what had happened to him and that he was painted as something that really was not accurate. But, yes, similar things have happened to people. They feel intimidated, you know, they're being served maybe in a nursing home or maybe their dead parent has been served. And the tactics that are used, you know, they do pull out that eminent domain card pretty quickly in the process. And a lot of people who have not dealt with companies like this before, you know, they're not like us that have dealt with, Northern Natural Gas and, you know, the State Highway Department. And it's scary. They come to your door. And they say, hey, you know, we have some paperwork here. We'd like to have a project go through. We'll pay you X, Y, Z. And people that feel intimidated and that they pull the eminent domain card saying, you know, if you don't sign up now, you know, you may not get very much at the end of the day. So you might as well take our offer. And some of these people that have signed up, I just want to remind people, if you have signed up, even if this project is not permitted by the PUC, you have just sold that easement to them in perpetuity, forever. And so you will have no control. And the next time a project like this comes through, they've already got that many easements lined up to go because you've already signed yours over to them. And so I would be very careful if anybody's approaching you. I would really encourage people to get a lawyer And whether you want to do the project or not, please get a lawyer to look over paperwork that you're being presented with, because these things are written by the pipeline companies for their benefit, and you want to make sure that you are protected in this whole project. And so, but yes, they have been using those tactics, and some of the people that signed early on regret their decision, and they actually, you know, now the offers that are coming out are quite a bit more than what was offered at the very beginning. And, you know, in my book, that's just wrong. And it's not fair.
One of the questions I've had, Carla, is what is the definition of just compensation? But because what might be enough for you might not be enough for your neighbor, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, just compensation is decided by a jury. And so, you know, I have no doubt that some of the money that they are throwing out that looks pretty good to a lot of people, is, you know, it may help them at this time in their life. And again, we want to go back to all the time, but should you be forced to take that? Should you be forced into that? And I do also think that a lot of the people are not understanding that easement is gone forever. So yeah, that money might look good today, but down the road, two or three generations, when especially you have some of these, growing communities, it may not be nearly enough. And so, again, that's where I would encourage them to get a lawyer and to look that over with somebody that really can understand all of that language.
Tell me about the legislation, Carla, that passed in the House and then went to a Senate committee and was defeated and did not even make it to the full Senate for a vote. Tell me about that bill, what the language in the bill said, and ultimately why it died out in Pierre.
Okay, so you're referencing House Bill 1133. And what that bill said, previously, this is what the law read. It said, all pipelines holding themselves out to the general public as being engaged in the business of transporting commodities for hire by pipeline are common carriers and are not subject to the provisions of this Title 49. So basically what the law was saying was a pipeline can come and they can tell the general public, hey, we're going to be a pipeline company and we are going to be engaged in transporting a commodity for hire through a pipeline, and that makes us a common carrier. And what you have to understand then is that's tied to another law that basically says that pipelines that are common carriers can use eminent domain. So, because a common carrier may exercise the right of eminent domain in acquiring right of way. So what my bill said, House Bill 1133, it added to that and it said, for purposes of this section, the term commodity is a product that is intended for commerce, is being transported to a point of distribution, consumption, or processing within our state or outside of our state. It does not include a product that is disposed of in geological storage or used in a manner that allows its owner or shipper or the shipper's customer to basically use that tax credit, that 45Q. So a commodity, you and I understand, a commodity is something that is used. And basically what they're doing with this project is they are going to be burying, permanently sequestering CO2, which is plant food, by the way. They're going to be burying that in the ground, and they're getting our tax dollars to do it. So that's what we wanted to do. We needed to define commodity. And so it went through the House 40-28. We had two people missing that day, and I'm pretty sure they would have been with us. So we would have had probably two more. And it went over to the Senate committee, and we really felt that the writing was already on the wall. You could tell, you can read body language, you can see how people are responding to the people that are testifying, and that bill died 9-0. And we saw similar legislation die in Iowa in the same manner and in North Dakota. So, you know, these pipeline companies have done their homework, and they've seen what our laws are and where they need to maneuver through them, and that is, you know, that's the law. So that's why we really needed to change this so that we could protect the citizens of South Dakota in this case and Unfortunately, the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee did not do that.
Carla, were you the author of 1133?
I am the sponsor of House Bill 1133, and I had a lot of great legislators sign on alongside me.
When that bill passed the House and then went to the Senate committee and was defeated 9-0, how quickly did you start thinking about, okay, we need to pivot here to something else? In other words, we can't let this just die on the vine. What was your thought process when it was defeated in the Senate committee about, okay, where do we go next?
Well, we knew that we were going to have to keep fighting because the pipeline companies don't rest, and they're going to be coming through whether you like it or not if we don't do something. And we just felt it was that important, and especially when we started seeing the condemnations come down. You know, a lot of times at the very beginning of these projects, we saw these companies say, you know, we don't want to use eminent domain. You know, that's the last resort. We're going to try to work with people. Well, when we see over 100 condemnations since session has ended, and I don't know what that number is now, but I know it's over 100. When we see that kind of condemnation come down in the state of South Dakota, that is not a good look for our state. That means to me that these companies have not done their due diligence, that they have not worked with people, and we need to be able to protect our citizens because according to our South Dakota Constitution, it says that, you know, part of our rights are acquiring and protecting property. And to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Well, when I heard what was going on, especially up in McPherson County, and right now, I mean, we have four counties in our state that are being sued by these pipeline companies. That's not a good look either. For any company to be coming and suing the citizens of their state and now the counties of their state, that's not a company that I would personally want to do business with. And so we had to pivot, and when we saw this really ramping up with the surveys and everything and get, you know, they're coming on the land and people don't know how to react. They don't know if this is the law that they can come on without, you know, their permission and all of this. And we ended up going up to Leola, and I just said, you know, is there anybody listening to these people? I'm not from their district, but I care because I know how important property rights are to the individual. So a few of us legislators went up to Leola. We had a rally in their little town in front of their courthouse. We heard speeches like from Sid Feichert, who said his family moved here from Russia years and years ago, and the reason that they came to the United States was because their property was being confiscated by the government. And so those are the kinds of things that I think we have to listen to people that have had experiences like this in the past, and this is why they are so concerned, and that we all should be concerned about private property, because private property is not just land. It is the house that you own. It's your vehicle. It is the shirt on your back. It is the cash in your bank account. And if we start setting precedents like this that come against people's property rights, what is next? What next are they going to be coming for? And so, yeah, we really knew we had to get busy. We had to get organized. And, you know, there's things townships can do. There's things counties can do. So we really put out an effort to get people organized. Because, you know, the pipeline companies are organized. They have billions of dollars behind them. They're very professional. They can come into a town. They can buy you a ball field or, you know, whatever your town might need and to win your favor. But at the other end of that, they can also be quite heavy-handed and do some arm twisting on the other side to get their project through. So yes, we're fighting. You know, there's many people that are fighting this in court. So there's very many levels, but we have to remember this has not even been permitted in our state yet. So the Navigator hearings before the PUC began yesterday. The summit hearings will begin September 11th. So I would just encourage listeners to to tune into those hearings and to hear the testimony specifically starting next week of the landowners, to listen to their stories, and you can get it firsthand from them.
Carla, if there's no special session late this summer or fall, and Senator Schoenbeck was on the show on Monday, and he told me flat out it's not going to happen. If there is no special session and the issue is not taken up until the 2024 session early next year, is that too late then?
Well, it's too late for these people. I mean, again, unless it's stopped in another way, whether the PUC would come back and say, no, we're not going to permit you. Well, again, then their project is done. However, those easements that have been signed, that company still owns. But also, you know, it's being fought in court. There's two of the survey cases that right now will be heard before the South Dakota Supreme Court. We're still awaiting a lower ruling down in Minnehaha County on one of those surveys. But, you know, this is ongoing, and we're just, again, we're going to continue to address it any way we can. I would just point out that the governor still has the authority to call a special session if we do not get the two-thirds in each chamber to call it. And I would also remind people, we don't need two-thirds to pass a law. We only need a simple majority. So in order to be heard and to discuss these things, that's when we need the two-thirds. But in order to actually pass something, all we need is a simple majority. And so I would just encourage any representative or senator that is listening, we have some good legislation. Let's go forward. And, you know, it's not like we have to be stuck with one thing. That's why we want to have the discussion. And there's so much that has transpired since the session ended. I really feel that we have good grounds to call for a special session. And so I would call upon those other legislators and senators to sign on to that petition. Or, Governor Noem, we would ask you, really at this point, we would beg you to call a special session and to get behind landowners and say, yes, we're gonna do something about this.
I had the governor on about 3 weeks ago, Carla, and she gave me that infamous quote of, I'm with the landowners, I've always been with the landowners. Yet, when it comes to calling a special session, she has said, without consensus from the legislature on a bill, calling a special session would be fruitless and a waste of taxpayer money. Has the governor been out front and vocal enough on this? What are your thoughts on leadership's position on this issue?
Well, I will say I saw a leadership come out and testify on different bills during the session. They did not testify on my bill or any of the other bills, to my knowledge, that were brought in this specific sphere. So there's that. And I did write the governor a letter with 22 legislators that had signed on to it April 17th, I believe I sent that. Never heard a response. And we also invited her to Leola. And I know the governor is busy and people in those positions, I mean, we're all busy. And things are scheduled and you can't always get to everything. But, you know, we haven't seen the governor come out and be on the ground with the landowners and talk to them and hear their concerns. I haven't seen that. It doesn't mean she wouldn't, but we would sure invite her to do so. Call a meeting and listen to the people on the ground, the people that, you know, all of us elected officials are here to represent. And so we would just, you know, again, ask her with respect to come out and really go to bat for the landowners, if you will.
What's your gut feeling, Carla, on whether these two pipelines get permitted by the PUC? And if they do, then what's your next move?
Well, I do know that, I didn't listen to all of the testimony yesterday. What I did listen to was very interesting. Some of the questions that were being put forth, I don't really want to guess. You know, all along, I guess we were thinking it would be permitted, but we don't know that. And so I'm hoping and praying that the PUC members really take to heart all of the testimony and that they look, there are four things that they will rule on. and that is that the proposed facility will comply with all applicable laws and rules, that number two, the facility will not pose a threat of serious injury to the environment or the social and economic condition of the inhabitants or the expected inhabitants. Number three, the facility will not substantially impair the health, safety, or welfare of the inhabitants. Or four, that the facility will not unduly interfere with the orderly development of the region. So I think for sure there are three of those things that they don't meet today as we talk on this show right now. There's three of those in my view that they don't meet. So it will be interesting to see how the PUC does rule. I believe that there is enormous political pressure to have this go through. So, you know, time will tell. What was your other question with that?
Well, and if the PUC does permit these two pipelines, what recourse or what might be next for the opponents of these projects?
Well, I think they are going to exhaust every avenue that's legally available to them. I do know that there has been talk of a multi-state effort getting together and getting something into federal court. So we will see if that takes, you know, if that comes to fruition. I believe that this is such an important thing. We're not going to give up. So, you know, there are a few avenues left to us. We will continue to organize. We will continue to help people find their voice and know what their rights are. And again, you know, there's these different avenues that it's being fought, whether it's the townships. Townships have things that they can do. And, you know, but if it's permitted, you know, this is why it's important to have setbacks and things like this. But we're seeing that even those are being challenged. And, you know, it really is an attack on our local government, I believe, because local government is in place because they are the closest to the people. And they hear the people and they hear the concerns of that specific community. And if we lose local control, and a pipeline company is just able to come in and really trample over the ordinances and the things that have been put in place for the protections of the citizens in their community, then this is a bigger fight than what we even thought it was going to be.